Crouch. Bind. Set.
Joe presents The House of Rugby, Season 3.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe. Some may say it's a miracle that we've made it to Episode 3, particularly if you've seen behind the scenes the technicalities they have been testing. But English people will be over the moon to know that it is no longer a Celtic lockdown. I'm delighted to have this week Alex Good back after his starring role in Episode 1. And Autumn Nations Cup, one of the top try scorers, Jamie George, an Autumn Nations Cup winner. Guys, great to have you here. It was a bit of a slog, wasn't it, getting on? But Alex, what is the time check in Japan at the moment?
Yeah, it's about 5 a.m, so pretty early. And apologies for my delay in terms of whatever I've been downloading, which is slowing up my internet, to be honest.
Jamie has loved it. When was the last time you two saw each other?
Well, I was about to say, you look a lot better than the last time I saw you at 5 a.m.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's probably par for the course, really. At any stage, anyone sees me after 1 o'clock. Probably be last time we saw each other as a whole group, really. After our last game against Bath.
Good night, that, actually.
Yeah, we had a bit of a send-off for everyone. In our bubble, effectively, at the time. And, you know, it wasn't the perfect way to say goodbye to a lot of players like Brad and Wiggy, etc. But it was nice just to be there as a team, really. And then these boys went off and went into their own bubble and have torn up trees and got all the success they deserve.
And got an impressive hangover as well, Jamie, to keep the theme
going.
Yeah,
I was in trouble yesterday. We finished the game and then had a few beers in the change room and stuff. And then it was like straight back to the Lensbury last day. It was technically my stag do, because I'm getting married this weekend. So yeah, I said to you before, it's like, it's the worst destination for a stag do ever. The Lensbury Hotel, in one of the conference rooms, but, we made the
most
of
it.
This is the thing. I hadn't really planned it. Elliot Daly was my best man. So, I mean, he literally genuinely like piss up in a brewery. He couldn't organize that at all. So, I went to Owen Farrell's stag in Hvar, which I would love to repeat. Great spot.
Not the Lensbury.
It's not how you imagine it, is it? It being a conference room, you know,
not
with
quite.
A pen and paper everywhere, you know, maybe some mints. But yeah, some beers as well, I guess. So, and you got the river, so.
Yeah, have a splash.
Weird.
Yeah.
Well, that's like a big thing to have on your stag do, the view of a river.
Well, I don't know. Someone might have just taken it too far.
Really? Like, this epitomizes what we're trying to say. I mean, we're scraping the barrel to find positives for the Lensbury as a stag destination.
Because if you invite people to your stag do in Hvar or something like that, you can choose, or Elliot, whoever, can select the people you want to go. I presume at the Lensbury, everyone who was part of that squad, therefore, was there. Was he there?
Eddie was on my stag. Good crack, actually.
Good.
He had a fair few glasses of red. Like Sam Underhill was quite funny. He was like, I never ever expected. We get on really well, but like, I love taking the piss out of him. And he was like, I never expected to be on your stag. Do it's a massive honour. I was like, yeah. I mean, just for clarity. If you didn't have to be here, then you wouldn't be.
Oh, that's wow, ruthless.
Whoa, I'm we're getting joking. To know Jamie George a bit better now.
Tell us how you really feel about your teammates. Let's go through the whole squad.
I love Underhill. I'm only joking.
In terms of piss-ups, just going back to that, because obviously your wedding is not going to be that. It's going to be a very respectable situation. Saracen's piss-ups are legendary. Alex Good, your Saracens piss-ups have been like a thing of news-making stories.
Yeah, look, I think as a team, we, like any team, we enjoy each other's company with a few beers. I think some of our trips together, I sort of genuinely believe they've helped us on the field, spending time with each other, you know, get to know each other a bit better. And alcohol does help that, in my opinion. I'm not sure the science on that, but
I'm not sure if that was sewn up in a court of law, to be honest.
No, but no, I mean, I like any teammates, love going away with the boys to a good place, you know, having some good meals, having some drinks together, and just having a lot of fun. It does bring us closer together, I think. And, you know, some of the trips to the odd ski resort have been perhaps dangerous at times, but no injuries, and everyone's had a great time, really.
And did you not post, was it George Cruz or yours, Jamie? Did you not post at someone's address on Twitter or something?
Yeah, that was, it wasn't mine, thankfully, but Goody, was it you that tweeted? No, it was Duncan Taylor originally, I think.
And I think recently, the first time, yeah.
The first one was like on a random Sunday, just saying after party at George Cruz's house, and then posted his actual address, which was really, really quite good crack. And George said the best thing about it was that he didn't have anyone turn up but one bloke with a six pack of Carlsberg. It was just, and like, he was like, do you really expect me to let you into my house? Like, get out. Yeah. It was great.
I mean, I think the best bit about it was George used to get so angry about it. So yeah. When I did it on the, 2 years ago now?
I can see why, to be fair.
No, I can, but it's George. So as we've established, he's, you know, up and down. So sometimes he deserves it. On the Monday, I think after the European Cup final, I put his address out there with the boys sort of egging me on a bit, and we thought it was hilarious. And actually, when we'd left the house, again, the same thing. These two guys turned up with a crate of beer at sort of 5 o'clock, and George's housemate opened the door and said, what are you doing? And they were like, oh, we're here for the party, you know, with Alex and his full kit. He was like, they've already left, mate. Sorry. These guys are driven, like, I don't know, half an hour or so, an hour after work to come and join us. So they were pretty devastated. But George did say to me, he said, this is before the World Cup, and he said, look, if I get burgled, I'm coming for an insurance claim on you for telling them where I live. I was sort of living in fear throughout the World Cup, thinking, is he serious? Because he might actually take me to court on this one. But luckily, no one went there, so it's okay.
Okay, we have got a pretty busy programme coming up for you. We're going to talk an awful lot more about Saracens. We're going to talk about World Rugby's players and teams of the decade. I'm sure you saw that. And also we're going to talk about the sad story of Steve Thompson's battle with dementia and the lawsuits. But first, let's talk about Sunday's match. Jamie, congratulations. You've won the Autumn Nations Cup. I mean, that's what you set out to do. But France made it pretty difficult for most of it. Or did England make it pretty difficult for themselves for most of it?
It was a tense one, wasn't it? I always knew that that game was going to be that way. Like, before the game, there was a lot of talk about the French team that had been picked and how, you know, it was the Mickey Mouse Cup and all that stuff. And I just thought, like, there's no way that this French team is going to allow this to happen. Like, the way the set of coaches that they've got there now, they've obviously got huge backing with the World Cup being there in 4 years' time. And the depth of players, like, I spoke to Alex Lazowski not long ago, and he was saying, like, you just see so many, like, first of all, massive blokes in that league. So they turned up with the biggest team ever. And then, you know, such good players. And, you know, it was never going to be a walkover. Look, we didn't play overly well. But at the same time, I think a year ago, we probably wouldn't have, we would have lost that game. So it was good for us to find a way to win. And, we're probably the first and last winners of the Autumn Nations Cup. I don't think it's probably never going to happen again, is it?
Why do you think a year ago you would have lost that? I know that Eddie's spoken about, you know, he was worried about the World Cup final hangover. And since then, you've won this Autumn Nations Cup. You've won Six Nations as well. But what makes you say that?
I just think that there were times probably in games previously in 2019, you look at the final as well, where, you know, things started to get a little bit tough. And, you know, when we needed to chase games, we let games get away from us a little bit. And I think that stemmed down from individual responsibility of players getting carried away, but also the leadership of the team. And I think the way that the team's been led over the last 12 months since that final has been amazing. And, you know, we were a lot calmer on the field. You know, it's great, you know, experience is everything in this game. And, you know, we certainly draw on the experience of the final, and you know, we didn't try and fix things on our own. We stuck to the system, and you know, eventually it worked for us. We had to do it in the 79th minute and then the whatever it was, the 18th minute of extra time. But, you know, that I think, again, having gone through that experience, the team's only going to be better from it.
Did you talk a lot about that a lot of World Cup winning teams or finalists sort of have a slump after the World Cup and sometimes struggle? Would there be a mention about how you wanted to just keep the momentum after the World Cup and everything you'd done through the year?
Yeah, I think there was an element of that. Like we didn't really talk about the negative side of things, but what we do well as a team, like we run sort of communication sessions within the team where the coaches aren't in there. And I think that's one thing that we do really well is sort of get everything out in the open. We try and make it the most honest and open group that we possibly can do, where, you know, if you do have concerns, if you do think that we're still struggling from the World Cup, if you are nervous for the game at the weekend, you know, we give people opportunity to speak about it. And I just think that we're in a such better place off the back of it. You know, before, sometimes those things can seem quite scripted and, you know, to be honest, a bit of a waste of time. But these, we've managed to find a way where it's all very player run. And, you know, we've managed to, like you said, keep going with the sort of momentum from the World Cup. And then, you know, thankful to win that Six Nations and then took it into the Autumn Nations Cup as well.
Is that a new thing, Jamie, to have a communications meeting without coaches?
No, it came in before the World Cup. So we had a couple of psychologists come in and do it. Will Carling comes in for it also. He does a bit of consultancy work for us. I guess you could call it that. I don't know. He's a great bloke, Will Carling. But he comes in and does sort of helps all the leaders out. You know, obviously one of the best England captains of all time. So he runs it. But generally, you know, the psychologist and Will will be in there. But more often than not, it's sort of the leadership group or, you know, they'll give it to a couple of different players to run. And, you know, like I said, there's never that much structure to it, but it's more of a, you know, what are we thinking this week? How do we think last week went? And then, you know, there might be a couple of exercises that the psychologist tries to do with us just to get us talking as a group if it's going a bit quiet.
Did you ever think, or was it discussed, Jamie, that if things weren't done and dusted in that extra time that you got to those kicks, you know, who would be taking the kicks?
Well, I don't know about anyone else. I imagine Owen and George and people like that probably knew, but I didn't even realise that there was going to be an extra time. Like we were all running around on the sideline and then myself and Ellis Genge were talking and then we heard that it was golden point and we weren't sure whether the lads on the field knew. They obviously did know. But we were like panicking.
You certainly hope so.
Well, no, they did. It turned out they did. But we were panicking and like trying to shout from the stand, like, it's golden point, lads. Like, take a drop goal. You know what I mean? Like, everyone at that stage, you know, you much rather be on the field. Like, I was so, so nervous in the stand. I'm a terrible watcher at the best of times. And yeah, I'm very glad. Although it would have been quite intriguing. I'd quite like to have watched the penalty kicks, to be honest.
It was interesting. We've all been sitting, waiting for fans to come back, desperate for fans to come back to sport. I know a lot of the players were saying about they could hear them cheering and it was great to get that atmosphere. Maybe the booing less so. I mean, that must have been a surprise. Could you hear it, Jamie?
I couldn't, no. But it was, I mean, look, first and foremost, it was amazing to get to get fans back in the stands. Like, yeah. It's been so weird, you know, for me personally, I had my 50th cap and Ben Young's had his 100th cap and we're running out to an empty stadium, just sort of giving it the big in. And actually running out of Twickenham, even though it was 2000, I thought those 2000 gave it a good crack to create a good atmosphere. And, it was great to have them back in there. I didn't hear any of the booing, but, it was probably a bit too tense for me to hear any of that.
So Jamie, obviously when you got the hat trick, you know, pretty impressive. Must say I was pretty happy at home watching, very late in the evening for me though. You know, I was just wondering, do you get the ball afterwards? Did you go up to the ref and just say, I'll have the ball off you? You know, Jack Grealish, or did you get anything for it?
Well, just for clarity, it wasn't overly impressive, was it? I literally didn't.
Jamie, it's a hat trick for your country, mate.
Don't get me wrong, I'm taking it.
There's not many who have scored a hat trick for England.
True. I'm going to take it. Don't get me wrong. But no, I didn't even think about the match ball and I'd wish I had done. I mean, yeah, fun, it's funny. I don't really score that many. So, yeah, I didn't think, I am gutted I didn't get the match ball, but that would have been quite a good crack. Yeah.
Did actually, on any of the tries, did you manage to get your feet over the try line?
No.
Because I always count that as a half a try. I think if you get your feet over the try line, it should count as a full try, and then half if you just sort of flop.
You flop over, yeah. I am good at, yeah, it's just, it is quite embarrassing. You know what it's like. Like if you'd score, if I scored like two and then maybe one other from at least 5 meters out where I didn't have eight lads in front of me, then that might have been slightly more impressive. But yeah, you can't go around giving it the big one about a hat trick from all tries.
Well, I don't know, mate. I'd take three tries for England.
Yeah.
Maybe have a word with the ref about getting the ball now. Maybe it's too late, but you can always get there. I mean, it makes you feel better. Yeah, I didn't ask for the ball after my first game in Japan. I didn't dare speak to the ref after one instance where it was a penalty to the opposition team. And so their penalty, kicking to touch. They kick to touch. Ball goes out by about 5-6 yards, like a good distance. Linesman puts his flag up, you know. My teammate goes from out of the field, takes the ball, runs 2 yards onto the field, then throws it to the fullback. I'm sort of wondering what they're doing here, lads. It's a bit mad. Fullback starts running off and the referee just sort of plays on. And I'm like, hang on what level is this okay? One, the ball has gone out and my teammates just run it back on. And secondly, it was their penalty. And next thing you know, we're 5 yards from their line. I'm trying to catch up going, what have I just seen? But it's just adapting to the referee's interpretation, I guess, not just the rules of the game.
What's the equivalent of jouer in Japan, good?
Jouer, it isn't really a jouer. I think it's just constantly jouer. It's just wide is good. Just go wide. Just go wide again. Make a break, go wide. If in doubt, go wide. A lot of
I can't wait for you to come back to Sarries and we just play direct. Yeah. You're going to get so frustrated, mate.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite going to happen. I think I'll be all right about it. There's frustrations everywhere in the world, mate. I'll leave it at that.
Was the standard decent or like be honest with me here. Like what's the...
No, like...
Don't give me the media answer. Give me the...
I was pleasantly surprised. I came into it not sure. I had heard good things, bad things. The players, like, they are unbelievable athletes. Like, you got these guys who, like, no fat on them. They work so hard. They're ripped up. They're so strong in the gym. Yeah, these guys are, like, one guy's like 85 kilos, just banging out 150 on the bench. All of them are like 140 plus. I'm going, yeah, how the hell are you doing that, guys?
You must look tiny. So pathetic in that team.
Well, I don't look pathetic because I'm quite tall. I put it quite gangly. So they're all saying like, oh, yeah, you're pretty fit. They expect me to be really physical. Yeah, probably take the gain line, be sorting people off. And then they see me play and realize that I'm just avoiding contact at all costs. It's impressive. Their training, like minute one, they are 100 miles an hour in the morning. This like 35-year-old. He's just doing sprints everywhere in the morning, afternoon, sprinting everywhere, banging up, 10, 11Ks Monday, 10, 11Ks Tuesday. I'm like, guys, I haven't got this in me. My hamstring's going to come off the bone at this point. But the work ethic and the excitement they get from playing rugby is really infectious. They just want to run and play and basically play jouer the whole time, which is fun to be part of, I've got to say.
Well, Alex, the reason that you are playing out in Japan just now and not at Saracens is because of everything that's gone on over the last 12 months. And we actually talked about it at the beginning when you were talking about your night out. That sort of collective of players has either dispersed for 1 year and they'll all be coming back, or Jamie, like you, a lot of them have stayed. You're obviously not playing Leicester this weekend because you're getting married. But I just wonder, Jamie, what does the next sort of 6 months look like for you as a Saracens player? How much are you actually going to play for the club?
Well, those conversations are still ongoing, really. Initially, the talk was not a huge amount. And it's generally the club have been brilliant. So, they've said it's personal preference whether we want to use the championship games as a bit of fitness prior to hopefully getting selected for England. So that was initially the plan. Obviously, with everything getting delayed now, we might have a few fines or bans from the Barbarians game, so we might be needed to play the first couple. But yeah, I mean, the next 6 months, you know, come in probably after Christmas now. There's a bit of talk around the championship starting mid-January, which is 2 weeks, I think, before this, we meet up with the Six Nations. So could be a good opportunity for us to get back into it. So might play a couple of games there and then hopefully get selected for the Six Nations. So away then for the next couple of months. And, you know, I guess it's then about seeing what sort of position we are at and how we're getting on in the league and how we're feeling physically and mentally, and then sort of see how we go from there. But one of the best things about Sarries is that you are always really managed very well. So, you know, they genuinely ask your opinion, and it seems as if it's going to be a personal preference. So I know that Billy, for example, is just mad to play. He's desperate for, you know, he's a new dad. So I'm pretty sure he's keen for a couple of away trips so that he could get some sleep and maybe some beers. I don't know.
It's interesting because it's not just Six Nations in England. You've got a Lions as well next year. So I imagine that you want to put yourself in the shop window for all of these big occasions. When you were deciding to stay at Saracens, or when that collective was, which has really been the framework for England over the last couple of years, did you speak to Eddie? Did you speak to Warren Gatland about where these opportunities to showcase your talents would come from if you weren't playing week in, week out in the Prem?
Yeah, I spoke to Eddie. Eddie was one of the first people I spoke to, really, because, you know, my main ambition, like you said, is to put my hand up for that Lions tour, especially off the back of having been involved in the last one. You know, once you do one, you're desperate to do another one, really. So that was definitely the case. Eddie was great. He just said, you know, as long as you keep yourself in reasonable nick, then, you know, we'll keep selecting you, or, you know, have more opportunity for, he thought it was a good thing for us to probably have a bit of a rest and do a bit more S&C stuff off the field, which I think will be good for us. Mark McCall at the club had spoken to Gats, who seemed to, again, take a pretty similar standpoint and say, you know, like, as long as you're putting your hand up for selection for England and playing in those games, then, you know, those are the ones that he's going to be looking at. So hopefully all that goes to plan. And yeah, I'm, you know, I'm actually quite excited about for what the next 6 months looks like.
And Alex, from your point of view, how much contact do you have with Mark McCall or with the club since you've been in Japan? Because you're still part of Saracens.
Yeah, I'm just hanging on my fingernails on the outside. To be fair, Mark gave me a call a couple of weeks ago, which was great, just to check in. Had a few texts back and forth with some of the coaches, which has been great. They're all sort of seeing what Japan's like. I think they're angling for a move at some stage in the future. I won't name the coaches. They've been really good, to be fair. And then obviously the boys, I'm sort of hanging in the background, the WhatsApp group, and there's a couple other groups that I'm part of. I'm on a Call of Duty group, actually, which I don't even play Call of Duty. So, anything just to sort of catch up with the boys and hear what they've been up to in the day, which is usually just anyone fancy a game. But sometimes there's a bit of gold in there, you hear. So, yeah, hearing about Jamie's Call of Duty skills, which are improving by the day, I hear. So it's good to know.
I'm so bad. We play, like, I don't play at home. And just because, you know, bubble life, you've got to try and entertain yourself. But, oh, I am awful. There are some guys that are pretty mega as well. Like Luke Cowan-Dickey was like number one in the world at one stage. Yeah. And he had all those boys. And he's come, like, we had a Red Bull gave us like a gaming center. So they had like big screens all over the place and PlayStations, Xboxes. And the lads could watch you play. And honestly, it was embarrassing. Like, Luke was like, mate, you are horrendous. And I was like, yeah, it's not my natural game, that, I don't think.
Yeah, it's the taking part that counts, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm literally just there just for like the socials, like whack the headset in, like boys are trying to take it seriously, and there's me like, what'd you get up to today, lads? Anything good? Like, they're getting so annoyed.
Let's just take the clock back 12 months. So when the news broke about Saracens, I was on the train from London to Cardiff. I was going to present the Champions Cup launch. So you imagine when I got there, there was like absolute disarray. There was an empty seat for Mark McCall. There was an empty seat in the stage for if anybody turned up. Obviously, nobody turned up. How much warning did you both have that this was going to happen in the way it did? Jamie, start with you.
We didn't have an awful lot because we were still at the World Cup whilst the sort of talk was going on. Like I can't remember when we first heard the rumors. I think probably with the same as everyone else that we were being investigated, but you know, we never thought that anything would come of it. And then, yeah, basically 2 days after the World Cup final, Mark McCall phoned me and just said, look, this is happening. So it went from bad to worse, really, to be honest. So it wasn't a great week, that one, but, yeah, I think that was the first that I heard of it, but it was all still relatively up in the air what the outcome was actually going to be. So, what about you, Gude? When did you hit?
I don't think we really heard any earlier than you guys.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of rumors floating around. But it wasn't anything that drastic. It was all quite calm. And then I think we, played the first game or something like that, and bang, it just hit us. And I think we got it the morning before. But I think that first sort of fine, 35 points deduction, we were all like in shock, but it also gave us something to aim for. We were like, well, okay, this is a nightmare. It's destroyed Europe this year. It's destroyed us doing anything. And there was obviously a lot of feelings, but as a group, we're like, right, well, we've just got to keep the club in the Premiership. Okay, that's our only aim. That's what we're going towards. This is our goal. This is everything now. And it was a bit of a rally. It was like, okay, we've got to come together and fight really hard. The England boys are coming back from the World Cup. We've got to pick up the slack, the guys here, and do as well as possible. And then they come back and give us a boost. But yeah, it was no time for preparation of it or to think about it. It just hit us. And I think even Mark McCall only found out maybe a couple of hours before us, etc. Because in this day and age, the media pick up on everything so quick. You can't hide things and gradually tell the squad. It's just, you got to tell them straight away, because in an hour's time there'll be a press release. So in that regard, it was really out of the blue for us, and they never expected that.
We know the wrongs of it. The whole thing has been discussed so much in the media, between different people, between different players. How much was it discussed within your group? Because I imagine the psychological strains, or just really the emotions, must have been pretty tough for you all.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about it a lot. Like, you know, it's hard not to speak about it. You can't not speak about it whilst it's happening. I think at first, the emotion of it, the fact that it was us against the world, we quite enjoyed that element of it. You know, I remember watching, was it Gloucester away? Was that the first game that we had, Gude, I think?
Yeah.
And that was like, I remember watching it at home and thinking like, wow, like what a performance. This epitomizes what Saracen's about. And we certainly played on it for a little while in terms of, you know, wanting to prove a point. And, you know, using it to almost bring the group closer together. I think the more that time went on, the worse the disciplinary actions happened, the worse the bans got, the harder it was to sort of use that side of things, the psychology of it. But then, I don't know, we were sort of in a position to then maybe have more conversations about what things are going to look like. I think there was probably a month or so where everything was very much up in the air. You know, Goody would have been trying to work out what he was doing. I was trying to work out what I was doing. You know, were we going to be playing in the Championship? If so, you know, that was the time when, you know, we were having the conversations with Eddie and all the rest of it. So, you know, I think that was probably the toughest month for me. But then, you know, again, things started looking up again, and we had Europe to go after at that point. And, you know, once everyone had got their sort of houses in order, and we realized that, you know, it was going to be the last year for a couple of legends at the club, and Wiggy and Brad and lots of other people leaving, like George and Goody going away for a year. And it was actually like, right, we need to play for each other here, and we need to, you know, make the most of this time that we have together, because it's not ever going to be the same.
Yeah, I think that bit at the end of Jan when it sort of hit us, and we had no idea of that we were going to be relegated and that was finalised. That was really, really tough period. You know, my emotions were sort of angry, but then also sadness, what's going to happen, the uncertainty. And both me and Jamie had only been at one club, so relatively easy. We want to stay there. You know, I speak for myself. I wanted to stay there and finish out my career. And next thing you know, you're not sure what's going to happen. You're not sure if you can stay, if you have to go. Are we going to be back in the Premiership? and it was just all up in the air. And I think our performances in that period probably summed it up. One week it was a big emotional spike. Next week we'd lose by 50 points or 40 points. And it just wasn't like us. But everyone's heads were everywhere. You know, there was a lot of boys talking about what are you doing, what are you thinking, what's happening. And no one knew. So it was a really uncertain period and quite a tough period in that sense. I mean, very tough. And then you think, well, we've got Europe to play for now. We're going to just put everything into that. And then COVID hits and you're like, and then the uncertainty again, and people then leave before you even get to give them a send off. And it became very difficult and a very tough period.
Did it affect friendships that you had with other players? Because there were players, whether it be at Harlequins or Exeter, who were pretty outspoken about everything. Jamie, you're obviously in that England setup and some people might have been saying different things. Did it actually affect friendships?
I don't know. I don't know whether it ever affected friendships because, you know, look, it's never nice when you hear people talking like that, especially people that you respect and that you care about. But at the same time, I think they're very entitled to their opinion. It was never news to me that they hated Saracens. You know, like there was, you know, whenever we met up in the England team, Goody, I'm sure you picked up on this as well. Like, people didn't like us, and you know, there was. Inevitably, there was a feeling that we got what we deserved. And look, like I'm certainly in the boat that, you know, we got things wrong and we had to take our punishment. And, you know, unfortunately that comes with people's opinions. But we need to sort of be humble enough to take that on board and realize that they're entitled to say what they're saying. But yeah, I mean, when it comes from people that you're close to, I think that's when it probably hurts the most, because it's not just about, you know, the club itself cheating and getting relegated. Like, this is genuinely affecting people's lives. Like, you know, as amazing as it is that Alex sat in Japan right now, his plan wasn't to be there a year ago. And actually, you know, he's had to up and move his life over to Japan. People have had to retire. You look at Brad Barrett, who, you know, you talk about a World 15, a team of the decade. He can't be that far away from it. You know, an absolute legend of the club captain, all the rest of it. You know, Richard Wigglesworth, things, you know, people like that. I just think, you know, it actually did genuinely affect people's lives. And, you know, when it gets like that, I think it then becomes more upsetting.
Yeah, I think from my point of view as well, I agree with everything Jamie said. I was a bit more annoyed at some of the people who were outspoken. Yeah, they are entitled to their opinion. I just thought it was a bit unnecessary. Another sort of dagger in the back, really, from people who had played with, knew pretty well, and generally, I just thought they were just doing it just to be controversial at some point, or just be really outspoken because of their dislike. And then these people who had openly tried to sign for our club and wanted to be part of it, and were always really intrigued by what we did, and yet, you know, when they had the chance, they were quick to, you know, put the knife in. And I just think, you know, things go around in rugby and you should be careful what you say. And you know, no one's perfect. And as Jamie said, you know, we were all going through turmoil at that point. So it was probably unnecessary.
So in 8 months' time, or whenever it happens to be, when you're all back together or people come back from their different countries, do you think it's going to be the same? Do you think you're going to have that sort of same collective atmosphere, or will it be more tentative, do you think, Jamie?
I definitely don't think it'll be tentative. Like, the boys are already talking about getting the band back together. You know, I'm incredibly excited about it. You know, these, like, you know, it's going to be weird going into the club every day and not having Goode in there trying to take the piss out of everybody on the physio bed. And, you know, all these guys, we've got some pretty special blokes who aren't at the club. And, you know, I think that the energy levels are going to be through the roof when those guys come back. Yeah, you know, it is when you say, is it going to be the same? I don't think it will be the same, but actually, could that potentially be a good thing for the club? Yes. You know, that we had an amazing 10 years, you know, we achieved some pretty incredible things. And actually, when, you know, you look at all great teams, franchises in America or the rest of it, you might go through a slight blip. No one stays at the top forever. And this might be an opportunity for us to reset and find a new way of us going forward as a group with, you know, some more experienced players at the top, but also some incredibly exciting youngsters, and also have a little look at our culture and what we're doing well. And also, you know, what we really need to change. So I actually personally think it's the most exciting time to be involved at the club, and I was one of the lucky ones that was in a position to stay. So I'm hugely excited about being a part of that.
Yeah, and I'm excited as well to come back and to do this rebuilding process, in a sense, because it is a rebuild. You know, we've lost some big players, we've lost some senior players who've been part of this journey for so long. But I think with all the sort of hatred and things said about the club and people chucking so much at us, I think it would just bring us hopefully closer together, you know, and actually give us something to go, right, this is us now to prove a point. And that's exciting for me. And something that, you know, I can't wait to have us all back together again and to showcase what it is to be a Saracens team and a group going forward.
Now, Alex, you mentioned Brad Barrett and teams of the decade and who you would put in it. Well, World Rugby have come up with their men's and women's players of the decade and teams of the decade. And I'm just keen to get your opinions on them both. Let's just run through the men's for you. In the front row, we've got the beast, Tendai Matawarara, Bismarck Duplessis and Owen Franks. Agree, disagree? Jamie?
I agree. Yeah. So the beast I would put in, you look at longevity in the game, you look at, you know, the way that he, you know, he won that World Cup final, you know, involved in the one before. I just think, yeah, 100% tick. I think Dane Coles deserves, you know, a nod. I just think with all this, like, there's an interesting thing in that, like, if it's the team of the decade, do they not have to have played for the, for the decade? I don't know.
Majority of the 10 years. Think,
like, yeah, it's an interesting one. There's been 10 years.
There's a couple of people who like retired in 2015 and stuff, which I find interesting. But yeah, all in all, I'd go with that. That front row is pretty good and be pretty horrible to play against.
I mean, I think Dan Cole deserves a mention, yep, personally. Dan Cole, okay. That is, not Dane Coles. You know, just England set piece has been dominant for a number of years. He's played, 90 caps for England. At times he was playing 80 minutes every week. I know it's not a sexy pick, but, you know, a very good scrummager from all accounts, I'm told.
You're a guru of the scrummy.
Well, he goes forward.
It's a good point.
Yeah. I just think, you know, in terms of someone who's played throughout that sort of 10 years, you know, he's
no, 100%. His name should definitely be in the hat as well. Yep.
Okay, we've got a Kiwi second row, Brodie Retallick and Sam Whitelock.
Difficult to challenge that, really. Like, could you put Matt Field in there? I suppose, like, Matt Field and Botha, like, they probably earlier stages of the decade, really. Yeah. Like, could you throw Marrow in the mix? Like, he has been around since 2015.
Yeah.
But yeah, difficult to argue that. I'd go with it.
Yeah.
Goody, fair. Did you go?
Yeah.
Okay. He doesn't have a clue. He doesn't have a clue about this forward stuff. Look at it.
Nah. I mean, right, look, I think Whitelock definitely, because he's played like 100 caps in that period. So I'm happy with that.
All right. Back row, we've got David Pocock, Richie McCaw, Sergio Parise.
Flankers, 100%. Mm-hmm. Parise is an interesting one.
I don't agree with Parise. Fundamentally, okay. I don't think he's been the world's best at any period in that 10 years. And I think it, not that you just want to keep picking All Blacks, but you've got, his name's just left me.
Kieran Reid.
He's been there for that whole 10 year period. He's captained his country to 40 odd tests. I think he has to be in there. Billy,
I would also throw Toby Faletau in the mix. Like, I just think, like, that guy is just unbelievable. We played against him the other day and he was by far Wales' best player and has been playing for a long time. You know, I just think he's right up there. But yeah, Reid and Billy and Toby is, some serious quality there.
I'm glad Pocock's been mentioned as well, because he is unbelievable. He ruins games and he kept sort of Australia in the fight so many times with his turnovers. Yeah. I played against him at under 20s and he was just the best player I've ever seen. And then to see him go to test level and just make a mockery of the breakdown. You know, he's a phenomenal player. So A lot of injuries, but brilliant player.
Okay, goody. The halfbacks they've chosen are Connor Murray and Dan Carter.
Well, Dan Carter obviously has been killing it in Japan for the last couple of years, so that's a reason why he should be in the best players of the century, let alone the decade. But I think you can't argue Dan Carter too much. I think Sexton, Owen probably will be close because they've played throughout the decade. But Dan Carter obviously winning the World Cup, pretty impressive there. And a very good-looking bloke, so not much I can say against him.
Good-looking halfbacks, good-looking halfbacks.
Yeah, yeah. I actually, there's been a lot of talk about playing Aaron Smith as the nine. I think Connor Murray's a phenomenal player. I think if you see what Ireland's done, you know, his influence on that Lions in 2017, he was incredible. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant player. And Ireland's sort of rise throughout this 10 years, a lot to do with him and obviously Sexton and other guys, but he has a massive impact. So I quite like that as a pick. But Aaron Smith would probably get a nod as well.
In the centres, Jamie, Manono and Brian O'Driscoll?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult not to pick Manu Tuilagi in there, isn't it? Like, there are no Englishmen in there, which is bugging me.
Yeah, that is. That is a bizarre
just
one.
Like, man,
you should
Manu,
try being Scottish.
I don't know, like Manu in there, like O'Driscoll and Nonu are just freaks, aren't they? Like, but Manu is just,
I think it comes down to the criteria though. Like, Brian O'Driscoll is probably the best player ever to play in the Northern Hemisphere, potentially. But was he not at his best between 2000 and 2010? More so. And I would say, definitely. Now, if it's just on how good the player is, then you pick him. But if it's over the 10-year period, I think Jonathan Davis has been incredible, winning Grand Slams for Wales, two Lions tours, which he played all six tests, and he got Player of the Series in 2017, I believe. And he's just an immense player. We talked about him earlier. Jamie admired his body shape and his muscles. Said he looked good naked.
Excellent.
You know, I just think he's someone who probably deserves to be there for this 10 years more than O'Driscoll. And that's no slight against O'Driscoll. He's a phenomenal player, but I would pick Jonathan Davis.
Okay, out in the wings, we've got Brian Habana and George North. Goody.
Yeah, I sort of think about this. You know, a lot of the All Black wingers, they're in for a couple of years and out. You know, they've got so much talent from Milner Scudder to Surveyor to Naholo, Corey Jane before that. You know, there's so many good wingers they've had. I think Brian Habana was still, you know, exceptional even though he retired in 2015. And George North has been very good for Wales. I didn't really have anyone else as a winger to put forward. I don't know if Jamie's got any ideas on that. So, you know, a lot of guys have been made good, but I think those two have been exceptional.
Yeah, I go with that, really. Like, I'm struggling to think of anyone else who's had a similar impact over that period of time. Like, I'm just going to have my English hat on here, though. Like, Johnny May's done a pretty good job, hasn't he? But, like, team of the decade, hard to say, really.
Chris Ashton keeps texting me saying I should
pick
him.
No chance.
He would honestly make the team look so attractive because he's the ugliest bloke in the world 15. But at the same time, no, you can't pick him. Never. He's delusional.
Well, he played at 15 at the weekend, didn't he? But the world player of the decade, team 15, is Ben Smith.
So. Can't argue with that, in my eyes.
Yeah, he's a very, very good player. Exceptional, really. I'm doing disjustice there, disservice even. Yeah. He's an amazing player. And actually, he sort of does it without being freakishly quick or huge or great at anything. He's just brilliant, brilliant player. He makes breaks for fun, does all the small things so well, and probably underrated by the general public, I would say. He's an exceptional player.
And the world player of the decade in the men's game was Richie McCaw. Would you agree with that?
I'd go with that.
Yeah, hard not to agree with that.
It's like, he's the GOAT.
Let's just run through the women's, because that's quite an interesting one. As you would expect, a lot of England players in there. Rocky Clark, Sophie Hemming, Tamara Taylor, Maggie Alphonse, Katie Daly-McLean, Emily Scarrett, Lydia Thompson, Nolly Waterman. Interestingly, the women's player of the decade, Jessie Tremoulier from France, wasn't actually included in the list of the team of the decade. Now, we wouldn't want to take it away from Nolly Waterman because she is wonderful, but that is a little bit odd that the player of the decade isn't in the team of the decade, do you think?
Could you not have shifted like Nolly onto the wing maybe? Like, it just doesn't make sense, does it? It doesn't sit right.
It doesn't make the whole process look great, I'm not going to lie.
but a good representation from England. Yeah. From the yeah, Red Roses, no. as you would which, expect. Which,
But that, you know, it's, you know, they've been a very dominant side for a number of those years. They've obviously won the World Cup. You know, it's great to see, you know, and they've been a sort of leading light in the women's game. And it seems to be they're taking their game up and up each year. So great to see, and hopefully more success in the future.
So guys, some sad news that we learned today is that a group of former players, including Steve Thompson, is suing the rugby authorities after saying that he's got early signs of dementia and he is blaming rugby for this. He cannot remember, he says, any of the matches, and he played all of the matches in that 2003 Rugby World Cup win. Desperately sad. How much, Jamie, have protocols changed over the years since you've been playing even?
Yeah, obviously, look, first of all, it's horrendous news. Steve was someone that I looked up to massively as a kid. He's also someone who's been very supportive of me during my career, sending me a lot of messages throughout. So, you know, horrible to hear something so horrific happen to such a nice bloke. I think that's the sort of, I guess, the encouraging thing. Is that the protocols are in place now are completely different to back in 2003. And, you know, you get asked a lot, you know, are you worried about, you know, when you hear about these things like this, are you worried about it? And, you know, I don't think that you can afford to be whilst you're playing, but at the same time, you know, you've got to put a huge amount of faith and trust into the medical staff and actually the coaches that look out for it now as well. I think the awareness around concussion is a lot better at the minute. Still think there's a way to go, but at the same time, you know, the medical staff, the protocols that go in place when you do get a head knock, make sure that you're absolutely right when you come back into play. So, you know, that gives me a lot more faith. And, you know, I think that that's certainly been a massive improvement, and it's night and day from what it was back in 2003.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously thoughts go out to Steve and the other players in this case, and it's never nice to hear that a fellow rugby player's suffering, and obviously it's terrible news. I do think we're always constantly learning more and more about concussion and what goes on in the head and the impact of the sport. But I do think the welfare has improved massively since I started in rugby. As Jamie said, not only are the medical practitioners more aware of it, but the coaches are more aware of it, players are more aware of it, so there's an understanding that, you know, we do need to take care of our heads, and, you know, concussion is a very serious issue for later life.
There used to be a thing that a player would try and almost evade an HIA. Do you think that has changed, Alex, over the years? Do you think that players are a bit more savvy, that they're not going to try and get out of this?
Yeah, I think there was probably just your own pressure you put on yourself. You didn't want to let the team down. You didn't want to be pulled out for a head knock. You know, it's hard to sort of measure it. You know, it's not like a broken leg or something. People can't see it. So it's just how you feel. And you just go, I'll be all right. I'll shake it off and I'll go onto the field. But I think, you know, more and more people are aware that, you know, they want to be able to be a parent to the kids and be a good husband or whatever it is at home for later life, and actually be able to work in an office or do a job. And they're thinking, actually, maybe I should just be careful of this. You know, I can have one game off in the Premiership season and come back a week later and be in a better place. So I think there's a bigger awareness from the players as well. You never want to let a team down, but people are a bit more careful now, which is only a good thing.
Gents, I think we're running out of time. It has been a pleasure. Jamie, I know you've got to go and plan for your wedding. Is that what this week entails?
Yeah. I'll do.
Sounds like you need to get the old paracetamol in and Barocca by the sounds of it.
What's that, mate? Oh, I'm fine. Thanks. Thank you, Alex.
Alex, what does your day entail, dare we ask?
Probably go out to bed for a little bit, to be honest. I've actually got a day off, so probably be hitting the yakiniku, the all you can eat meat at some stage.
You'll be getting an onsen, won't you?
Possibly, yeah.
I do like the onsen.
Yeah, it's very weird at the start. Obviously, I discussed it last time, but being naked in a sauna, watching sumo wrestling with a load of men, is an odd one. But once you embrace the culture, it's incredible.
How good are the stools in the shower as well? I know we've covered this, but like, how good are the stools? Like, sitting down in the shower is just revolutionary.
I'm 100% bringing the stool back to me. Can you bring me one back? Yeah, I'll get you one back. Yeah, I'll get you one with NEC branding on it. So I've actually tried.
Is it special? Can't you just buy a stool?
No, you can't. Mm. I tried to find one online and you can't. Okay. It's not the same.
They're like baby stools, really.
Yeah, they're
not quite baby stools.
But they support 150 kilos.
Yeah, and they've got a nice lip to them, so they really do fit in nicely. And you just sit there and just sit down, and it makes the shower experience phenomenal. I must say, it has changed my life. I spend a lot longer in the shower now because of it. And I'm not attracted.
Wow, we're lucky to have had you on the pod before you dashed off. Thank you so much for your time, guys. Thank you to you for watching or listening and for choosing House of Rugby. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby, Season 3, on Joe.